This Week in Nuclear for January 19th, 2010. A very disappointing Public Service Commission ruling in Florida. Welcome to the show. This is John Wheeler, and you're listening to This Week in Nuclear, a podcast where I talk about the peaceful uses of nuclear science and technology, and how nuclear energy will make our world cleaner, safer, and less reliant on fossil fuels. This past week, there was a very disappointing ruling in the Florida State Public Service Commission, in which they denied two utilities' requests for power system upgrades, including transmission lines, additional gas pipelines, upgrades to power plants, and new nuclear reactors. I've made arrangements to give my friend Rod Adams a call to discuss these developments. Rod, as many of you know, is the host of the Atomic Show podcast and the producer of the Atomic Insights blog. So let's see if we get Rod on the phone. Hey, Rod.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So, yeah, I was shocked when I saw the news come out yesterday morning. I guess I wasn't shocked. Disappointed is a better word for it.
Well, there's some significant politics going on back there. Apparently, Charlie Crist appointed two new public utility commissioners just recently. And he had opposed the rate hike.
Well, it makes you wonder where they think the electricity is going to come from. Because Florida already has very slim margins. And well, I noticed this past week or 10 days or so ago when they had cold spell there, they had a new all-time peak demand for load. Mm-hmm. And we kind of look at it from a nuclear plant perspective, but when you look at it from their overall investment, for example, Florida Power and Light is going to have to eliminate a gas line, two gas plants, and upgrades to existing fossil fuel plants on the Atlantic coast of Florida. And
yeah,
that's going to really affect their ability to meet the demands. They're going to start having power problems.
Well, it's interesting. I'm reading it. The other things that the Public Utility Commission did on their rate case, they set a profit margin of just 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Which is reducing their ability to have much flexibility. They refuse to allow them to increase their storm fund. Now, this is a fund that gives them the ability to respond to hurricanes. I mean, we're talking about Florida here.
Yeah.
They have a $215 million fund, and they wanted to increase it by about $150 million a year.
At this point, Rod and I lost our connection temporarily, and it took me a couple of minutes to get reconnected, but then our conversation continued. Hey, Rod.
Hey, John. You dropped off.
Yeah. You dropped off. I don't know what happened. I thought
you
got disconnected.
No,
it's you. So, I don't know.
I was saying, this idea that, Florida Power and Light doesn't need a strong storm fund just is nuts.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah, this is really, really short-sighted. And I read, and I can't find the source of where I read it yesterday, but there was a point that FPL made that they had not had a base rate increase since 1985.
That's correct.
and it's just absurd to think that the cost of producing electricity hasn't risen tremendously since 1985. You're right. The storm preps in their response, they said they would have to. Actually, this was Florida or Progress Energy. They were requesting rate hikes of about $500 million a year, and they were given nothing. And their CEO stated that they're going to have to cut out things like maintenance at their plants and their transmission lines and reducing their tree trimming next to power lines budget by $10 million a year. Now, I know from personal experience that tree trimming is not done for beautification. It's done to limit the damage that trees cause during wind events onto the power lines. And if you cut back on your tree trimming, you can expect to have greater storm damage.
Yeah, and wind events are very rare in Florida.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. I had read the same thing, that the governor of Florida had appointed two new Public Service Commission members who were very anti-business, and this is a very short-sighted decision. It's going to have long-lasting effects because, even if the utilities go back and file again or appeal the case, it will take probably years, at least a couple of years, to get it back before the Public Service Board.
So. Well, on the other hand, there are some people who are quite excited about the victory that they claimed with Beyond Nuclear having the front page of their website saying, FPL halts two new reactors targeted at Turkey Point. What appears to be a major victory for anti-nuclear efforts in Florida.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Now, I didn't see that, but it doesn't surprise me. But they're not also talking about the two large natural gas-fired plants that will not be able to be built under... Here's one thing to consider. Under the regulated utility, what that does is it opens the door for investors to invest in non-regulated generators in Florida and make a killing because the utility won't be able to provide all their needs. They'll have to buy the power on the market, and who will provide it? If you can go in there and plop a gas turbine down and provide power to Florida Power and Light or Progress Energy, you can probably make a tidy profit.
Well, I know that there was some significant fighting and support of the fight being paid for by the company that owns the natural gas pipelines into Florida. They didn't like the idea that Florida Power and Light was going to have their own pipeline and not have to pay a toll to them.
Yeah. So I didn't know that, but that's further supports my belief that there's there's some real winners here. It's just not the ratepayers are the losers, and the utilities are the losers. But, the utilities are, as we've talked to before, they're regulated. Now, their allowable return on equity has been dropped from 12.5% down to 10.75%. So it will be, their stock prices will probably take a hit, and they'll may have a tougher time meeting their commitments. But there will be great business opportunities for people like independent natural gas suppliers or gas pipeline owners.
So. Yeah, it's a crazy thing. I just don't understand why folks don't recognize that it's a long-term investment to build a large nuclear power plant. But the history shows that investment pays great dividends, and in a regulated environment, the dividends get paid to the ratepayers.
That's
they're the
right.
ones whose rates get held down for decades afterwards.
That's right. Oh, there's many, many examples of that all over the country right now. In fact, it's true in Florida with the St. Lucie power plant and the Turkey Point on the East Coast and Crystal River on the West Coast.
Well, Crystal River when it's operating.
What's that?
I said Crystal River when it's not got a crack in its containment.
That's true. Yeah. Well, they generally have a good operating record dealing with issues right now. But
yeah,
one of the things that we might want to just kind of talk about briefly for listeners who are not aware, how do regulated utilities make money? Because it's not a simple profit equals cost minus or revenues minus cost.
No, so. the business of setting the rates for a rate-regulated utility is a very complex affair where the utility has to go in front of a public utility commission and prove that they have prudently invested the capital that they've invested and then ask for a certain return on that investment. And the public utility commission can make it a favorable place to invest like they have in Georgia. or they can make it a very difficult place for the utility, which is making prudent investments to ensure reliable electricity for its customers, get made.
Right. And so they, and what often happens is the length of time between the expenditure and being able to begin to recoup a return on the investment is sometimes many years. When you look at building a large transmission line or building any kind of large power plant, whether it be coal, natural gas, or nuclear. Now, nuclear is more sensitive to it because of the length of time and the expense. But the amount of, by approving the expenditures and paying as you go, in the end, it will be much cheaper for the rate payers because they are, you know, paying it off a little bit at a time, rather than accruing all of that interest while the asset is not earning any revenue.
Yeah, one of the things that bugs me about the way that some public utility commissions set the rates is that it is extremely difficult for the utility to get approval for a capital investment, a large capital investment. But it's not hard at all to get approval to pass through changes in fuel prices. In Florida, I believe every 6 months there's an adjustment made based on the overall cost of fuel. And the utility doesn't make any profit on that, but they pass it directly to their consumers.
Right.
What that means is the utility has no incentive to try to build plants that use lower cost fuels. It doesn't matter to them. If they can get a really quickly built plant, even if it burns a very expensive fuel like natural gas, or I should say an unpredictably expensive fuel,
mm-hmm.
That's fine for them. It doesn't matter to the decision makers. The folks that have to pay the bill are the ratepayers.
Yeah. Yeah, what it does is it biases the whole process towards low capital investment, high variable cost sources of energy, and away from sources of energy that require high capital costs with low return, except when you have other legislation to force certain fuel choices, for example, renewable portfolio standards. In those cases, the utility essentially goes before the Public Service Board and says, well, the state law says we have to have X percent of wind or solar capacity by, you know, 2012 or 2015. Therefore, in order to comply with the law, we need to build this. Therefore, you have to approve it. And in those cases, the Public Service Commissions generally do because the utility doesn't have much choice. But then those are extremely expensive, and they offer very little in the way of return on investment for the ratepayers because of the cost of the power and the variability in the output, low capacity factors, and unpredictability of the supply.
And that unpredictability is really very damaging to the utility's ability to supply reliable electricity. And I think about how difficult it was when we used to have to try to synchronize our very reliable and steady output from a turbine to the output from a diesel engine whose intake was being opened and shut as we were near the surface of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite an interesting evolution to watch the synchronometer, synchroscope vary as you try to get ready to close that breaker.
Yeah, dancing around, going forward and backwards.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll never forget watching this guy named Ensminger. He had nerves of steel, and he would basically shut his eyes when he closed that breaker.
Well, I was on a merchant ship once, and I don't remember what foreign port we were in, but we were synchronizing our in-plant loads, our diesel generator. Essentially, we call it a port diesel because it's what we ran when we were in port. When we didn't have power, but we were synchronizing our port generator with our main turbine generator as we were getting ready to start up. And And I still don't know why to this day, but the first assistant engineer was synchronizing it, and he closed the circuit breaker 180 degrees out.
Ouch!
And, of course, the lights went out. Yeah, not only it tripped both generators, and so now we were in a dark engine room hole with our flashlights trying to get one or the other started back up again.
You're fortunate you didn't have a fireball coming out of the breaker box.
We really were, and nothing was damaged, fortunately. But and that was one of those things that just happened. Nobody really understood. He couldn't explain why he did it.
So. Okay, for the people who are listening who don't understand what we're talking about, when you synchronize alternating current, it's very important to try to minimize the difference in voltage between the phases of the current. And if you have two generators that are out of phase and say you're operating at, 440 volts, you could have 880 volt difference between the two.
And you know, thousands of amps of current that flows. And by the way, I also should make clear, that was not a nuclear ship that I was on. That was a oil-fired tanker.
Yep. Synchronizing electricity generators is, there's a lot of similarities, which is why I just don't understand how people get all excited about having wind turbines as their generating source. They're just not steady.
Yeah. Actually, this line of discussion reminds me of what it was like to operate a large generator in southern Florida, because I was licensed at Turkey Point and operated the Turkey Point 3 and 4 nuclear plants for a few years. And I have synchronized the main turbine generator at Turkey Point onto the grid in South Florida. And we used to have a phrase for that in South Florida. We called it the tail wagging the dog, because we were a very large generator at the end of a very long line of smaller generators and hundreds of miles of transmission line. And so when we came online, we were supporting most of the lower half of Florida with voltage support and load support. And it just kind of illustrates that even then, and this goes back about 17 or 18 years ago, they had a very tenuous situation in Florida with the load compared to the reserve margin or reserve capacity of electricity generation. And it's gotten worse since then, because the amount of investment in generating capacity and transmission lines has not kept up with the population boom that's occurred in Florida. So.
Yeah, it's a weird situation when you have folks that have this commodity that is so important to their daily lives. It's so important that if you lose it for 30 minutes or so, it makes the front page news that there was a power outage. And yet there are folks that think it's the big bad business that wants to invest money in upgrading the facilities that supply that important commodity.
Right. And, think about all the distribution and transmission system difficulties we've had around the United States as a result of not investing. The Northeast blackout that occurred several years ago was due mainly because of a lack of investment in maintaining the transmission distribution system. Yeah, there was some human errors involved, and yeah, there was some equipment failures, but the redundancy of the system did not function as it was designed because it had not been maintained.
I also want to put some numbers on exactly what the Public Utility Commission is saving the customers by not approving this rate case.
Oh, do you have some numbers?
Oh, yeah. The average bill for a customer that consumes 1,000 kilowatts of electricity each month would have increased by $8.95. So the consumer protection in this case is, saving somebody approximately the cost of two cups of coffee.
A month.
Per month.
Yeah.
That's for a household. That's not for per person. That's for a whole household.
Yeah. Well, Florida Power and Light was also very critical because of the impact on the economy. They were anticipating 20,000 new jobs as a result of all the work that they had planned to do in upgrading their transmission lines, upgrading and increasing the capacity of several power plants, building two new gas-fired plants, and building two new reactors, and laying that pipeline through Central Florida. So they were expecting 20,000 new jobs, and now those jobs are gone. And I've been in Florida very recently, and you know, the economy in Florida is not great. They really cannot afford to lose those jobs. And then Westinghouse released a statement. They were going to provide the two reactors, the AP1000 reactors, and they made a point of saying that each reactor would have generated 2,500 good local jobs while under construction, and probably 700 or 800 per reactor while it was in after operation. And they also made a point that they, when they build local, they buy local, and so it would have had a trickle-down effect on the local economy of parts, supplies, contract, building trades, manufacturing, etc.
Sure, you've got a lot of electrical parts that are just standard electrical parts. You've got a lot of concrete and rebar and a whole bunch of stuff that's going to come from local suppliers.
Right. So it's really, you know, the people of Florida really lost out all the way around, and it's obviously a politically driven decision. So I hope they're able to turn it around. I don't have a lot of faith that they'll be able to turn it around quickly. But eventually, eventually the ratepayers are going to pay. They're going to either pay now or they're going to pay later. I wish they had the Public Service Board had the integrity and the insight to realize that it would be much more cost effective to plan for their destiny rather than react to what happens in the future.
Yep. Well, I will actually offer one bit of disclosure on this. My dad was a Florida Power and Light Company employee for 35 years, and Mom still draws a pension from Florida Power and Light Company. And she's one of those widows that used to be, remember when utility stocks was a widow's and orphan stock?
Yeah.
Where it paid regular dividends, and it was something you could depend on because we didn't have the politics being played with the rate cases. Well, she's one of those widows that depends on the dividends that come in from Florida Power and Light Company stock.
Well, I already stated my disclaimer. I used to work for FPL. I don't currently have any financial horses in the race with FPL. I just want to see the people of Florida get a fair shake, and they're obviously not.
So. Yeah. Well, I also have a horse in that race. I am a Florida resident, though I haven't lived there in a long time.
One of those perks of being in the military, right?
Yeah. Well, us active duty, we're protecting the place where we came from.
Well, yeah. You went to Nuke Power School there too, probably, right?
Yeah, but I grew up in Florida. I know quite a few folks that became Florida residents while they're at Nuclear Power School or at Flight School in Pensacola.
Yeah. So I'm looking here real quickly before we close up on this discussion. I was curious to look at the rate of return of FPL. So I'm on Google Finance right now and looking at the rate of return for the last, let's just pick a time, for the last 5 years. And let's see. My system's a little bit slow. It looks like over the last 5 years, the stock has gone from about $35 a share to $50 a share. That's not a giant growth, you know. So it's obvious that the company, although they do pay a dividend on a regular basis, they are not a huge growth stock.
Well, so. And utility stocks are not supposed to be huge growth stocks.
That's right.
There is a need, I think, in the investing marketplace for companies where you can invest and expect a modest but steady rate of return, dividends, because you're supplying a commodity that doesn't grow very fast, but it's one where people need it all the time. So, You know, I think that over the last, you know, 15 years or so, the love of risk has been a real detriment to American prosperity.
Yeah, and it makes it harder for utilities to get investment, because the investors are investment community tends to be very short-sighted and look for the high return in a short period of time rather than the longer, more stable.
Well, so, like I said, I think that's a change. Mm-hmm. I think that there was a time when the investment community had people who went to be bankers because they wanted a boring job that was regular. People wanted to save a little bit every month, and so they would have a nice retirement. And people wanted to invest in companies that provided a good service over a long period of time rather than always looking for the maximum return in the shortest amount of time, which is not investing. It's called gambling.
That's right. So, all right. Thanks, Rod.
Appreciate
your time. Hey, okay. Before we close up, do you want to connect back together and talk about a few other things?
Sure.
All right. Let me disconnect and wrap up this recording, and then I'll give you a quick call back.
All right. You got it.
Thanks. Bye. It was sure great to talk to Rod today. If you go to the show notes for thisweekinnuclear.com, you'll find links to Rod's podcast and blog in the show notes for this episode, and they're listed on the links section of my blog. So thanks again for listening to This Week in Nuclear. Be sure to stop by the website at thisweekinnuclear.com. So until next time, this is John Wheeler. Have a great nuclear day.